Sounds True and Chambala Lion Editions present A Brief History of Everything by Ken Wilber. Session 1. Spirit in Action, an Introduction to the Spirit of Evolution.
If we look at the various fields of human knowledge, from physics to biology to psychology, sociology, theology, and religion, certain broad, general themes emerge, about which there is actually very little disagreement. In working with broad-orienting generalizations, we can suggest a broad-orienting map of the place of men and women in relation to universe, life, and spirit. The details of this map we can all fill in as we like, but its broad outlines really have an awful lot of supporting evidence, culled from the orienting generalizations, simple but sturdy, from the various branches of human knowledge.
So we'll follow the course of evolution as it unfolds, through the patterned nature, or process, of all domains of existence, from matter to mind to God, and not merely the physical universe. And we can begin this cosmology by reviewing the characteristics of evolution in the various realms. Now, you've isolated 20 patterns that seem to be true for evolution wherever it occurs, from matter to life to mind. Perhaps we can consider a few of these. Tenet number 1 is that reality is composed of whole parts.
Yes. Arthur Koestler coined the term holon to refer to an entity that is itself a whole and simultaneously a part of some other whole. And if you start to look closely at the things and processes that actually exist, it soon becomes obvious that they are not merely wholes, they're also parts of something else. They are whole parts. They're holons. For instance, a whole atom is part of a whole molecule, and the whole molecule is part of a whole cell, and the whole cell is part of a whole organism, and so on. Each of these entities is neither a whole nor a part, but a whole part, a holon. And the point is, everything is basically a holon of some sort or another. There is a 2,000-year-old philosophical squabble between atomists and holists. Which is ultimately real, the whole or the part? And the answer is neither, or both, if you prefer. There are only whole parts. Even the whole of the cosmos is simply a part of the next moment's whole, indefinitely. At no point do we have the whole, because there is no whole. There are only whole parts forever. So the first tenet says that reality is composed neither of things nor processes, neither wholes nor parts, but whole parts or holons.
So reality is composed of holons, not just subatomic particles.
Oh, I know that approach is common. But it's really a profoundly reductionistic approach, because it's going to privilege the material, physical universe, and then everything else, from life to mind to spirit, has to be derived from subatomic particles, and this will never, never work. But notice, a subatomic particle is itself a holon, and so is a cell, and so is a symbol, and an image, and a concept. What all of those entities are, before they are anything else, is a holon. So the world is not composed of atoms or symbols or cells or concepts. It's composed of holons. And since the cosmos is composed of holons, then if we look at what all holons have in common, then we can begin to see what evolution in all the various domains has in common, how they all unfold, the common patterns they all display.
So what all holons have in common, that's how you arrive at the five tenets?
That's right.
So, tenet number 1 is that the cosmos is composed of holons, and tenet 2 is that all holons share certain characteristics.
Right. Because every holon is a whole part. It has two tendencies, or two drives, we might say. It has to maintain both its wholeness and its partness. On the one hand, it has to maintain its own wholeness, its own identity, its own autonomy, its own agency. If it fails to maintain and preserve its own agency or its own identity, then it simply ceases to exist. So one of the characteristics of a holon in any domain is its agency, its capacity to maintain its own wholeness in the face of environmental pressures which would otherwise obliterate it. This is true for atoms, cells, organisms, ideas. But a holon is not only a whole that has to preserve its agency, it's also a part of some other system, some other wholeness. And so, in addition to having to maintain its own autonomy as a whole, it simultaneously has to fit in as a part of something else. Its own existence depends upon its capacity to fit into its environment. And this is true from atoms, to molecules, to animals, to humans. So every holon has not only its own agency as a whole, it also has to fit with its communions as part of other wholes. If it fails at either, if it fails at agency or communion, it's simply erased. It ceases to be.
And that's part of tenet number two, that each holon possesses both agency and communion. Now you call these the horizontal capacities of holons. What about the vertical capacities of holons, which you call self-transcendence and self-dissolution?
Well, if a holon fails to maintain its agency and its communions, then it can break down completely. When it does break down, it decomposes into its sub-holons. Cells decompose into molecules, which break down into atoms, which can be smashed infinitely under intense pressure. The fascinating thing about holon decomposition is that holons tend to dissolve in the reverse direction that they were built up. And this decomposition is self-dissolution, or simply decomposing into sub-holons, which themselves can decompose into their sub-holons and so on. But look at the reverse process, which is the most extraordinary, the building-up process, the process of new holons emerging. How did inert molecules come together to form living cells in the first place? The standard neo-Darwinian explanation of chance mutation and natural selection, well, very few theorists believe this anymore. Evolution clearly operates in part by Darwinian natural selection, but this process simply selects those transformations that have already occurred by mechanisms that absolutely nobody understands.
For example?
Well, take the standard notion that wings simply evolved from four legs. It takes perhaps 100 mutations to produce a functional wing from a leg. A half wing will not do. A half wing is no good as a leg and no good as a wing. You can't run and you can't fly. It has no adaptive value whatsoever. In other words, with a half wing, you are dinner. The wing will work only if these 100 mutations happen all at once in one animal. And also, these same mutations must occur simultaneously in another animal of the opposite sex. And then they have to somehow find each other, have dinner, a few drinks, mate, and have offspring with real functional wings. Talk about mind-boggling. This is infinitely, absolutely, utterly mind-boggling. Random mutations cannot even begin to explain this. The vast majority of mutations are lethal anyway. How are we going to get 100 non-lethal mutations happening simultaneously? Or even 4 or 5, for that matter? But once this incredible transformation has occurred, then natural selection will indeed select the better wings from the less workable wings. But the wings themselves? Nobody has a clue. For the moment, everybody has simply agreed to call this quantum evolution, or punctuated evolution, or emergent evolution. Radically novel and emergent and incredibly complex holons come into existence in a huge leap, in a quantum-like fashion, with no evidence whatsoever of intermediate forms. Dozens or hundreds of simultaneous non-lethal mutations have to happen at the same time in order to survive at all. The wing, for example. However we decide these extraordinary transformations occur, the fact is undeniable that they do. Evolution is a wildly self-transcending process. It has the utterly amazing capacity to go beyond what went before. So evolution is in part a process of transcendence, which incorporates what went before and then adds incredibly novel components. The drive to self-transcendence thus appears to be built into the very fabric of the cosmos itself.
And that's the fourth drive of all holons. So we have agency and communion, operating horizontally on any level, and then vertically, we have the move to a higher level altogether, which is self-transcendence, and the move to a lower level, which is self-dissolution.
That's right. Because all holons are whole parts, they're subjected to various pulls in their own existence. The pull to be a whole, the the pull to be apart, the pull up, the pull down. Agency, communion, transcendence, dissolution. All holons have these four pulls.
So what you're saying is there is indeed some sort of unity to evolution.
Well, it certainly seems so. The continuous process of self-transcendence produces discontinuities, leaps, creative jumps. So there are both discontinuities in evolution, mind cannot be reduced to life, and life cannot be reduced to matter, and there are continuities, the common patterns that evolution takes in all these domains. And in that sense, yes, the cosmos hangs together, unified by a single process. It is a universe, one song.
And that one song you call Spirit in Action, or God in the Making, which is a point I want to come back to later, but for now, tenet number 3 states simply, holons emerge.
Yes. As we were saying, evolution isn't part a self-transcending process. It always goes beyond what went before. And in that novelty, in that emergence, in that creativity, new entities come into being, new patterns unfold, new holons issue forth. This extraordinary process builds unions out of fragments and wholes out of heaps. The cosmos, it seems, unfolds in quantum leaps of creative emergence.
Which is why one level can't be reduced to its lower components, or why a holon can't be reduced to its subholons.
Right. I mean, you can analyze the whole into its constituent parts, and that's a completely valid endeavor, but then you have parts, not the whole. You can take a watch apart and analyze its parts, but they won't tell you the time of day. It's the same with any holon. The wholeness of the holon is not found in any of its parts, and that puts an end to a certain reductionistic frenzy that has plagued Western science virtually from its inception. Particularly with the system sciences, the vivid realization has dawned. We live in a universe of creative emergence.
It seems the tide has indeed turned, that the reductionists no longer have a monopoly on our view of the world. I mean, you hardly have to explain anymore why reductionism in and by itself is bad, and non-reductionism means, in some sense, that the cosmos is creative.
Amazing, isn't it? New holons creatively emerge. Creativity, holons, those are some of the most basic categories that we need to think of before we can think about anything else at all. So yes, that's tenet 3. Holons emerge. And each holon has these four basic capacities: agency, communion, self-dissolution, self-transcendence. And so, off we go, creating a cosmos.
Can you say more about how you link creativity and spirit?
Well, what is creativity but another name for spirit? If, as Whitehead said, creativity is an ultimate, you have to have it before you can have anything else, what is an ultimate metaphysical ground, if not spirit? For spirit, I also use the Buddhist term emptiness, which we can talk about. But spirit, or emptiness, gives rise to form. New forms emerge, new holons emerge, and it's not out of thin air. We already saw that many scientists agree that self-transcendence, or novel emergence, is built into the very fabric of the universe. By any other name, what is that self-transcending creativity? Spirit, yes? We're obviously talking in very general terms here, but so far it appears that we have spirit, creativity, holons.
It also seems that there's been a kind of warming up in some scientific circles to a more spiritual or idealistic reading of creation, wouldn't you say?
Well, yes, in a certain sense. The Big Bang has made idealists out of almost anybody who thinks. First, there's absolutely nothing, then bang, something. This is beyond weird. Out of sheerest emptiness, manifestation arises.
So we just looked at tenet number 3, holons emerge. Tenet number 4 is, holons emerge holarchically. Can you explain holarchy?
That's Kessler's term for natural hierarchy. Hierarchy today has a very bad reputation, mostly because people confuse dominator hierarchies with natural hierarchies. A natural hierarchy is simply an order of increasing wholeness, such as particles to atoms, to cells, to organisms, or letters to words, to sentences, to paragraphs. The whole of one level becomes a part of the whole of the next. In other words, natural hierarchies are composed of holons, and thus, said Kessler, hierarchy should really be called holarchy. He's absolutely right. Virtually all growth processes from matter to life to mind occur via natural holarchies, or orders of increasing holism and wholeness, wholes that become parts of new wholes, and that's natural hierarchy or holarchy.
So it's the dominator hierarchies that disturb people.
And with good reason, yes. When any holon in a natural holarchy usurps its position and attempts to dominate the whole, then you get a pathological or dominator hierarchy. A cancerous cell dominates the body, or a fascist dictator dominates the social system, or a repressive ego dominates the organism, and so on. But the cure for these pathological holarchies is not getting rid of holarchy per se, which isn't possible anyway, but rather in arresting the arrogant holon and integrating it back into the natural holarchy, or putting it in its rightful place, so to speak. The critics of hierarchy, and their names are legion, simply confuse these pathological holarchies with holarchies in general, and so they toss the baby out with the bathwater.
So some of these theorists claim that in getting rid of hierarchies, they're being holistic, because everything's treated equally and thus joined together. How'd you respond to that?
It appears to be just the opposite. The only way you get a holism is via a holarchy. When holists say the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, that means the whole is at a higher or a deeper level of organization than the parts alone, and that's a hierarchy, a holarchy. Separate molecules are drawn together into a single cell only by properties that supersede the molecules alone. The cell is holarchically arranged. And without holarchy, you simply have heaps, not wholes. You are a heapist, not a holist.
Still, how would you respond to the fact that many folks claim that any sort of hierarchy or ranking is oppressive, even fascist? They say that all such value ranking is old paradigm, or patriarchal, or oppressive, and it ought to be replaced with a linking, not a ranking worldview.
Well, that's a bit disingenuous, because you can't avoid hierarchy. Even the anti-hierarchy theorists that you mention have their own hierarchy, their own ranking. Namely, they think linking is better than ranking. Well, that's a hierarchy, a ranking of values. But because they don't own up to this, then their hierarchy becomes unconscious, hidden, denied. Their hierarchy denies hierarchy. They have a ranking system that says ranking is bad.
And you call this a performative contradiction.
That's right. The point is that the anti-hierarchy stance is self-contradictory. These theorists have a hierarchy, it's just hidden or concealed. With this stealth hierarchy, they attack all other hierarchies, and they claim that they themselves are free of all that ranking. So they denounce others for doing precisely what they themselves are doing.
Yet hierarchy has been put to many abuses, as you yourself have explained at length.
That's right. And in that regard, I very much agree with these critics. But the point is not to get rid of hierarchies or holarchies altogether. Well, that's impossible. Trying to get rid of ranking is itself a ranking. Denying hierarchy is itself a hierarchy. Precisely because the cosmos is composed of holons, and holons exist holarchically, you can't escape these nested orders. Rather, we want to tease apart natural holarchies from pathological or dominator holarchies.
So what you're pointing out is that holarchies really are inescapable.
That's right, because holons are inescapable. All evolutionary and developmental patterns proceed by holarchization, by a process of increasing orders of wholeness and inclusion, which is a type of ranking by holistic capacity. This is why the basic principle of holism is holarchy. The higher or deeper dimension provides a principle or a glue or a pattern that unites and links otherwise separate and conflicting and isolated parts into a coherent unity, a space in which separate parts can recognize a common wholeness and thus escape the fate of being merely a part, merely a fragment. So linking is indeed important, but linking is itself set within ranking and holarchy, and can exist only because of holarchy, which provides the higher or deeper space in which the linking and joining can occur. Otherwise, heaps, not wholes. And when a particular holon usurps its position in any holarchy, when it wants to be only a whole and not also a part, then that natural or normal holarchy degenerates into a pathological or dominator holarchy, which by any other name is illness, pathology, disease, whether physical, emotional, social, cultural, or spiritual. And we want to attack these pathological hierarchies, not in order to get rid of hierarchy per se, but in order to allow the normal or natural hierarchy to emerge in its place and continue its healthy growth and development.
Okay, so here's what I think we have so far. Tenet number one, the cosmos is composed of holons. Tenet number two, all holons have four fundamental capacities, which are agency and communion, transcendence, and dissolution. Tenet number three, holons emerge. And tenet four, holons emerge holarchically.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Those are the first four tenets.
So now we have tenet five. Each emergent holon transcends but includes its predecessors. Can you explain?
For example, the cell transcends or goes beyond its molecular components, but also includes them. Molecules transcend and include atoms, which transcend and include particles. The point is that since all holons are whole parts, the wholeness transcends, but the parts are included. In this transcendence, heaps are converted into wholes. In the inclusion, the parts are equally embraced and cherished, linked in a commonality and a shared space that relieves each of them of the burden of being a fragment. And so, yes, evolution is a process of transcend and include, transcend and include. And this begins to open onto the very heart of spirit in action, the very secret of the evolutionary impulse.
The secret impulse of evolution?
A molecule transcends and includes atoms. Transcends, in that it has certain emergent or novel or creative properties that are not merely the sum of its components. This is the whole point of systems theory and holism in general, that new levels of organization come into being, and these new levels cannot be reduced in all their ways to their junior dimensions. They transcend them. But they also include them, because the junior holons are nonetheless components of the new holon. So, transcends and includes.
So the higher has the essentials of the lower, plus something extra.
Yes, that's another way of putting it, which Aristotle first pointed out. All of the lower is in the higher, but not all of the higher is in the lower, which is what invariably establishes hierarchy or holarchy. Cells contain molecules, but not vice versa. Molecules contain atoms, but not vice versa. Sentences contain words, but not vice versa. And it is this not vice versa that establishes a hierarchy, a holarchy, an order of increasing wholeness.
You know, there's so much controversy over a level being higher or lower than another, and yet you've suggested a simple rule for establishing higher or lower in any sequence.
Well, take any evolutionary development, say atoms to molecules to cells to organisms. This is a sequence of increasing wholeness, increasing holons, each of which transcends and includes its predecessor. Now, if, in a type of thought experiment, you destroy any particular type of holon, then all of the higher holons will also be destroyed, but none of the lower holons will be destroyed. And this simple thought experiment can help you spot what is higher and what is lower in any sequence. So, for example, if you destroyed all the molecules in the universe, then all of the higher levels, cells and organisms, would also be destroyed. But none of the lower holons, atoms and subatomic particles, none of them would be destroyed.
Okay, I see. So higher and lower organization is not merely a relative value judgment.
That's right. It truly is not an invention of patriarchal obnoxiousness or fascist ideology. If you destroy any particular type of holon, then all of the higher holons are also destroyed, because they depend in part on the lower holons for their own components. But the lower holons can get along perfectly well without the higher. Atoms can exist just fine without molecules, but molecules cannot exist without atoms. A simple rule, but it helps us see what is higher and what is lower in terms of any holarchy. This rule works for any developmental sequence, for any holarchy. Moral development, language acquisition, biological speciation, computer programs, nucleic acid translations. It works by virtue of the simple way that wholes depend on parts, but not vice versa. And not vice versa, as we were saying, is holarchy, or an order of increasing wholeness.
This is how you demonstrate that the biosphere is higher than the physiosphere?
Yes. If you destroy the biosphere, that is, if you destroy all life forms, then the cosmos or physiosphere could and would still exist. But if you destroy the physiosphere, the biosphere is instantly destroyed as well. This happens because the biosphere transcends and includes the physiosphere, and not vice versa. And so, yes, the physiosphere is a lower level of structural organization than the biosphere. That is the meaning of higher and lower organization. And the bios is higher, the cosmos is lower.
So, in the same way, you say that the noosphere is higher than the biosphere.
In exactly the same way. The noosphere begins with the capacity to form any mental images, and this capacity begins with certain mammals, such as horses. But for this example, I'll confine the noosphere to more highly developed minds and human cultural productions, just to show what's involved. We get the same results either way. The biosphere existed perfectly well for millions of years before human minds showed up, before the noosphere emerged. And if you destroyed that noosphere, the biosphere would and could still exist. But if you destroy the biosphere, then you destroy all human minds as well, because the biosphere is a part of the noosphere, and not vice versa. So yes, the biosphere is a lower level of structural organization than the noosphere. The noosphere transcends and includes the biosphere. It is not merely a part of the biosphere. That's reductionism.
Okay, so the physiosphere is part of the higher wholeness of the biosphere, which is part of the higher wholeness of the noosphere, but not the other way around.
Yes.
But why do so many people picture the opposite?
Probably because people confuse size or span with depth. And people think that great span means great depth, and this is precisely the opposite.
So what exactly did depth versus span refer to?
The number of levels in any holarchy is referred to as its depth, and the number of holons on any given level is referred to as its span.
Okay, so in terms of depth, we could say, for example, that atoms have a depth of 1, such that molecules have a depth of 2, and cells, being greater than molecules, have a depth of 3.
Yes, along those lines. Exactly what we want to call a level is somewhat arbitrary. It's like a 3-story house. We can count each floor as a level, which is what we usually do, so the house would have a depth of 3 levels. But we could also count each step in the stairs as a level. Maybe there are 20 steps between floors. We would say then that the house has 60 levels, or a depth of 60. But the point is that although these scales are relative or arbitrary, the relative placements are not arbitrary. Whether we say the house has 3 levels or 60 levels, the second floor is still higher than the first floor. As long as we use the same relative scale, then no problems arise, just as we can use Fahrenheit or Celsius to measure water temperature, as long as we're consistent. So we could say quarks have a depth of 1, atoms a depth of 2, crystals a depth of 3, molecules a depth of 4, and so on. The depth is real, no matter what relative scale we decide to use.
So depth and span.
What confuses people is that evolution actually produces greater depth and less span on succeeding levels. And people tend to confuse collective bigness or size or span with depth, and so they get the order of significance totally backward.
Evolution produces greater depth, but less span. That's actually tenet number 8. I know we're skipping some of them. So could you give an example of this tenet?
There are fewer organisms than cells. There are fewer cells than molecules. There are fewer molecules than atoms. There are fewer atoms than quarks. Each has a greater depth, but less span. The reason, of course, is that because the higher transcends and includes the lower, there will always be less of the higher and more of the lower. And there are no exceptions. No matter how many cells there are in the universe, there will always be more molecules. No matter how many molecules in the universe, there will always be more atoms. No matter how many atoms, there will always be more quarks. So the greater depth always has less span than its predecessor. The individual holon has more and more depth, but the collective gets smaller and smaller. And since many people think bigger is better, they tend to confuse the direction of significance. They invert the order of being. They turn reality on its head and end up worshipping bigger as better.
Okay, so a holon transcends and includes its predecessors such that it has greater depth. But having greater depth, the population size of this greater depth becomes smaller. The so-called pyramid of development, which you mention.
Yes. You can see the pyramid of evolution very clearly. Where matter is favorable, life emerges. Where life is favorable, mind emerges. Where mind is favorable, spirit emerges. Vertical depth becomes greater, but the horizontal span becomes less. Interestingly, the perennial philosophy reached the same conclusion in its own way.
The perennial philosophy being...
We might say it's the core of the world's great wisdom traditions. The perennial philosophy maintains that reality is a great holarchy of being and consciousness, reaching from matter to life to mind to spirit. Each dimension transcends and includes its junior dimension in a nested holarchy, often represented by concentric circles or spheres. Each level includes its predecessor and then adds its own emergent qualities, qualities that are not found in the previous dimension. So each succeeding dimension is bigger in the sense of greater embrace, greater depth, and we will see that an individual holon's identity actually expands to include more and more of the cosmos. Yet the actual span of the succeeding holons becomes less and less. The number of holons at each higher level becomes smaller. Greater depth means fewer holons reach that depth, means less span. And so the actual population size becomes smaller and smaller, which is the perennial philosophy's version of the pyramid of development.
So we need to remember both of these progressions, both greater depth and less span.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Transcend and include is an actual increase in embrace, inclusion, identity, and folding, which gets larger in the sense of deeper. It contains or enfolds more and more levels or dimensions of reality internal to it as part of its very makeup, its very being, its compound individuality, and so it is more significant. It signifies or indicates that more and more of the cosmos is internal to it, just as a molecule internally contains atoms, actually enfolds them in its own being. So the number of holons that actually realize these deeper dimensions becomes smaller and smaller. Greater depth, less span.
Okay, but the highest level, spirit, isn't spirit everywhere? I mean, it's not a level, right? It's everywhere.
Each level transcends and includes its predecessor. Spirit transcends all, so it includes all. It is utterly beyond this world, but utterly embraces every single holon in this world. It permeates all of manifestation, but is not merely manifestation. It is ever-present at every level or dimension, but it is not merely a particular level or dimension. Transcends all, includes all, as the groundless ground or emptiness of all manifestation. So spirit is both the highest level in the holarchy, but it's also the paper on which the entire holarchy is written. It's the highest rung in the ladder, but it's also the wood out of which the entire ladder is made. It is both the goal and the ground of the entire sequence.
This concludes Side A.